Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. And we got a treat in store for you. Today, we are having the seventh of our pop-up poetry, something that we started at the beginning of the year and people have clamored and enjoyed it so much, we're doing it again today just for you. The pop-up poetry is something that doesn't have, it's short notice. Poets don't have forever to create something. There is a prompt and people present on a round robin, kind of in the order that they came in. And we have a thing called R-I-I-F-F, riff. Doesn't mean something rough is done to you. It's respectful, informative, interesting, friendly feedback. So we will hear that one or two people will do it, and then we'll move on to the next poet. And each person will briefly introduce themselves. They'll do their poem. One or two people from our audience will give riff, and we'll move on to the next person. So I'm going to start us off with a poem, because we have a pretty amazing life that we're living. Living the so amazing life, living without strife, living the so amazing life, exuding hope in perpetuity, facing old foes with new fortitude and forgiveness, awakened to unlimited possibilities, crafted from rearranged abilities, connecting dots left dangling, weaving the yarn without tangling, living the so amazing life, open-eyed dreaming in ocean breezes, soaring with Gerald Albright, kicking it with Kirk Whalum, loving every moment above the dirt. Living the so amazing life, speaking up, sharing out, enlightened words, specialized verbs, raising the bar higher, nudging fledgling eagles to fly. Living the so amazing life, elegantly emerging from strife, basking in orchid-lined wedding chambers, casting away fears, de-escalating dangers. Living the so amazing life, making vows etched from mother of pearl, blissfully exchanged without hesitation, finding comfort and joy already set, glancing out our southerly windows, catching the purples and golden sunsets, basking in abundance easily met, clothing customed for comfort and style. Living the so amazing life, leases signed, actualizing dreams, no stress regarding the address, islands of technology, whining and entwining. Living the so amazing life, broadcasting, broadcasting, love outswirling. Eternal hope is in the wind, custom change rooms, saunas and swimming pools, emissaries of hospitality gracing every room, joyfully embellishing the dream-centered spaces, living the so amazing life, days with one, enhanced by one, welcoming company as warranted, ever-expanded and exporting premises, driving alert and authentically attuned, delivering promises and commitments, anywhere, everywhere, under the moon. From the collection Soaring in the 70s. Okay, so I'll be the first one to be the guinea pig for you. One or two people, if you want to provide some riff. Cynthia?
I love the way that you read. I love how your voice is another layer to the poem and so inspirational. Thank you for your reading and your words.
Oh, thank you, Cynthia. Okay. I think the first person that came on, Neil Ryan, is someone that has been a part of our pop-up poetry or poetry pop-ups before and had the experience of writing a book and believing in it so much he drove across the country and sold it from places like Seawalls. So briefly introduce yourself and present the poem you're going to do, the first poem you're going to do today.
Hello, good morning or good afternoon or good evening, wherever you are. I was a pretend businessman for half a century. And when I retired, I said, what am I going to do with the second half of my life? At that time, I was 75, so I'm on my way to 150 and still writing poems. And After that beautiful poem that you just introduced, I'm going to have to go looking for a different poem because this one, oh no, I'll go for
Go
it.
for
I
it.
love, you took the words out of my mouth, and that is that I live in paradise. I live in Nanaimo, British Columbia, which is a 35,000-40,000 fishing village. And I live less than half a kilometer from a park with two lakes. So there's where my exercise is. And I'm no longer 75. I'm now 84. And I've been invited by UBC to join their program on how to keep mobile and be old. So I'm an old guy. But I wrote an interesting poem that I kind of contradict what the beauty that you referred to in your poem, Charlotte. But I'm going to read it anyway. We are all blind sailors. We sail into oblivion, ever experiencing loss, exchanging innocence for experience, trading sweet youth for age, and choosing for the warmth of companionship at the cost of independence. As we sail into the storms of life, the lust for that adventure will wane, giving up the joy of youthful optimism for the cynicism of adulthood. Eventually, to barter away our enthusiastic passion for life for the quiet comfort of the evening fire. Ever moving through time, we blindly sail into this sea of illusion, and to learn to be comfortable with life's continual reimagining, we must become comfortable with our continually letting go of dreams and intentions. For little by little, or maybe all at once, life will take them all away. Because we use the coin of entropy to purchase passage on this voyage, there is nothing we can keep. Nothing is for certain. Nothing is forever. And we sail not into the beauty of a cloudless evening sunset, indeed, into the storms of old age, sickness, and death. But there is a life to be led, experiences to have, people to meet, and at the top of the list is moving on, always moving on to the next adventure. Thank you.
Always moving on to the next adventure. Janice, would you like to give some riff to Neil?
We are all blind sailors. I fell off my chair. Yes. I think that when you catch us like that on the first line, we become a part of the rhythm of what you're saying. So I always enjoy the fact that I expect which way you're going and you don't go there. That's to me, that's what a poet should do. That's what a poem should do. And so that it can weave something for you to deal with, and each one of us deal with it in a different way. But I was just loving that first line. That I'm going to probably steal that, so hang on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Janice. Thank you. It is nice to see you again.
To see you too.
Would anyone else like to give riff to Neil?
Yes, I would. I had to turn off the air conditioning because it was roaring like a jet engine. Yes, the last part of that just really hit something for me, that as we continue to adventure, we're sailing into the storms of getting older. Wow. Did I relate to that? And yet there was such a wonderful, optimistic note at the same time that you're saying, yeah, we're going to ride these storms, but there all this other stuff happening too. And that's good. So yes, it's gave me a lot of encouragement today. Thank you.
Yes, I found that very upbeat and encouraging. Cynthia was another of the people coming early to our line last week. Cynthia Sharp sharpened us up with wonderful poetry and examples of something she's going to be presenting Friday live in Vancouver. Cynthia, introduce yourself briefly. And Cynthia invited a couple of people who I'll have you introduce as you, well, first we're going to hear your poem.
Okay, so thank you, Charlotte, for having us all here. So I'm Cynthia Sharp, and I'm going to be reading from my new book, Ordinary Light, which is in the Burnaby Public Library and the Vancouver Public Library and libraries through Canada. Thanks to Honey Novik, it might be in the Toronto Library coming soon. And thanks, yeah. I know I'm going to read my reasonably short poem. And I'm just so grateful that Diana Hayes and Adrian Guybrison and Honey Novik were able to come, people I invited. So Charlotte said flashy. I think one of my flashy poems in Ordinary Light is Sisters of the Meadow, which is ironic because Ordinary Light is celebrating all the beautiful small things. But one of the beautiful small things I like to celebrate, or one of the beautiful big things I like to celebrate, is Jillie Watson's art. She's from Bowen Island and she paints beautifully. And I fell in love with her work. So I wrote this poem to one of her winter paintings. And it was a poem. She paints the BC landscapes and she went on a hike and had painted these beautiful little trees. And to me, they felt like teen girls being safe in the world. And so I called my poem Sisters of the Meadow. Winter bursts forth fairy saplings, sisters of the meadow. Magical and raw at once. Pristine pine twigs dancing safely. Persimmon and pistachio holiday tinsel adorning their natural environment. Roots intact. Allowed the depth of their beauty. Incantations of blue in the stillness of frozen lakes. Quietly into their core. Like the brave red fringe of wildflowers, the undefined graciousness of being. So, thank you for listening. That's for everyone who, instead of getting a Christmas tree and putting it into your living room, just decorates one outside or allows them to be present to where they are. Thank you for the opportunity to share that.
Thank you. That is beautiful. Who would like to give some riff to Cynthia? Adrian.
Oh, hello everyone. Cynthia, it's been so long. I just love how you intermingle the essence of nature with these concrete experiences and personify it into something greater than just one thing or the other.
Oh, thank you so much.
Okay, Janice.
No, I was
Oh, you were waving.
Agreeing. I went last time. Someone else should speak.
I can give some feedback. I loved how, well, this is an ekphrastic poem, isn't it, Cynthia? So you begin with the painting and how you're able to paint with words so precise and so evocative. I felt like I was in the painting and in the trees, and I love the atmosphere that you brought me into. And of course, I love nature poems, so it was really lovely. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That means so much, Diana.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, I get to introduce Diana Hayes. So it means so much to me to get feedback from Diana Hayes, who
Okay.
was the first prize winner in a contest, the North Shore Writers Contest that I recently judged. So Diana Hayes from Salt Spring Island, author of many beautiful books and owner of Raven Chap Books, founder and owner of Raven Chap Books, is the next reader.
Thank you. Cynthia. And just a little plug for Raven, we're going to be opening our annual poetry contest in September, and all poets, emerging and established, all poets in BC are welcome to submit. So I'd love to see your manuscripts. So when I saw the prompt, flashy moments, I realized I don't have a lot of really flashy poems. I write a lot about nature and personal relationships. I've explored grief in this last book, but I have one poem that depicts the character of the trickster, Mr. Raven. And of course, ravens love flashy objects, including keys and earrings. So I'll read that poem for you. And it's called Raven and My Tourmaline Earring. Ancient bird, jaunty with two-footed hops, moxie galore, makes off with my tourmaline earring, the one that belongs on my left ear. And if you want to believe the paradigms of gemology, you should first know how the world cooks up toxic waste, liver and blood, spreads edema, ankles and feet, sparks metal ions, prosthetics lying in wait. This semi-precious stone will give you a leg up the mountain scree, never cramping your free fall. Lucky raven chortling, his booty all razzle and shine, will flare your libido, warble for his solo mate, just in time to swoop and roll, clear out the beach stash, all those tourists dropping talismans in sand, maybe a diamond in a shallow grave. I think our king of Corvid remembers all our moves. Face recognition, he covets amethyst from my locket, has an eye for polished silver, rehearses his struts with every croak and caw, then clicks like a mystery clock, lurking in branches, whistles me to move along, pleased with my good taste in earrings. Once I set my keys on a flat rock on a west blown beach, the middle of winter, left in clear sight, I was determined to get the best and last of the surf before night, my camera eyeing the wilderness. It was time to tempt the sea, breathe without gills or goggles. I returned to my rock and no keys. No keys. Clever Mr. Guardian Thief Raven teaches me to slow down, hitch a lucky ride back to town, turn and toss in a single bed, tangled up in shadow down, eyes of obsidian, a fine master of time. I am awake now, one tourmaline dream, brush of black wings nudging my ascent, see the bird passing through a cloak of trees, out past dawn, all luster, keys and earring tucked in his craw. Go ahead, bird, fly away. Remember my dream. You will know me by tourmaline when you come back for more.
Oh my goodness, I feel like I've been to the movies. You wrote a script. Oh, I'd never pictured a crow doing all of those things. And there was so much detail in the earrings and the keys. I mean, you've given us all a warning. If you go to the beach, keep your keys in your pocket or in a case. Oh, thank you. That was wonderful.
I should mention that this is actually based on a true story. I truly lost my keys on that beach, and it had to have been the raven.
Would someone else like to give some riff?
I really love the fact that I was a little bit in suspense for a while. It's the foreshadowing of you need your key on the rock. but it was such a surprise to hear who the thief was. It was really, really nice.
Yeah, and it made me think that you must spend a lot of time observing, because to notice all those things, I noticed the crow in the tree next door that he just wakes up at 4 a.m. and starts making this noise. Maybe he's telling his other night creatures, I've got stuff over here, you want to divide it up. But it just really is It was beautiful, but it reflects so much research and just paying attention in nature. Let's say this morning, if you're just joining us, this is Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon, where we and my guest and I speak up about things so that you can listen up and act upon what you have heard. We have poetry that acknowledges our need to take care of nature. We play music by artists, independents, give an opportunity often for writers and musicians to talk about their project, their passion, and their any causes they're working with. So if you're not on this particular day or time, you can contact us, send an email to me. I am Sister, because I am Sister C. I am Sister C at gmail.com, and we can work on scheduling you to take part in our regular programs. So we're going to continue on with this event that we started called Poetry Pop-Ups. Cynthia, would you like to introduce the other person that you invited?
I've got two more people. So we'll start with Adrian Guybersen, who's an amazing artist as well as a talented writer. We graduated together from the Simon Fraser University Writer Studio. She's also done a lot of service volunteering. She was on the board of directors for the Federation of BC Writers and just a wonderful human being. I'm so grateful she's here to share work.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I've been, my muses have been on holiday for a while, and I haven't been writing much lately, and I haven't been making much art either. So this was a real nice prompt to pick up my pen again and get some words down. I had been reading Pale Shadows from Dominique Fortier. It's actually a translation by Rhonda Mullins, and it's about the works of Emily Dickinson after her death, about how they found this bunch of poetry and how her family began to consolidate it into the works that we finally got to see in the world. And the writing is just phenomenally beautiful, and reading it inspired me. There's a little quote from Emily Dickinson that said, "I see thee better in the dark. I do not need a light." And flashy moments kind of correlated to me with this quote. And so I wrote a poem that I call Anahata. And it's a draft. So it's definitely a new, I haven't even really finalized it, but I thought I'd share it anyways. So there are constellations at the bottom of my cup, faces in the foamed milk that float on a sea of dark espresso, amalgamation of all my parts, Anahata, the coming together of two parts, unhurt, unstruck, and unbeaten, gateway to the celestial realm, soundless. Its twin beats at the center of my ribcage, the reliable drum holding balance over being and nothingness. In the vortex of my heart, there is a large black hole so dense, it wills me to disappear into its center, ripped apart by the force of its nature, to collapse into myself and lose my light. Is this annihilation or liberation? Unmanifest spirit waiting its next point of light. That's all. It's short.
Good question. Honey, would you like to give some feedback?
I like it. I, from a description of something very concrete, looking into the vortex of your cup of coffee, and from that, went into different depths and dimensions. Thank you. Yes, I understand the feeling. So thank you for providing it.
Yeah, imagination, the vortex dimension. I'm picturing the cup of coffee and the vortex going on in it. And do you drink it? Do you observe it? Do you pray about it? It's such a beautiful set of words that I'm
I noticed it's Neil. I noticed the cup of coffee as well. I thought that was brilliant. But I would like to comment on one thing only, and that is, you said the poem was only a draft. In my experience, every poem is only a draft. You come back to it 5 years later, you're a different person. And so you see the world from the new person's perspective. So I've had that experience very recently, that every poem and every writing is only a draft.
This is true. Thank you for that reminder.
Thank you for that poem.
Elizabeth, you've given comments about a couple of people. So you were one of the early people on the line. Do you want to share what you have written?
I'm not sure, because I did not write the poem. I haven't. What I had written was an epilogue to a playlet. It was on The Prodigal Son, where the father was so happy to see the son and wanted to celebrate and give him good clothes to wear and all that. And the older son, who had been home all the time, was angry and did not want to participate and felt that was wrong. In my playlet, I inserted the role of the mother. And the mother observed that even in the joy of the returning son, it's torn the family apart. And a lot of it had to do with forgiveness and that. So we had some discussion about it. With your indulgence, this is not a poem, it's prose, and it's in theatrical dialogue. I could read it if that's okay.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. This is the mother speaking. It's the epilogue to The Return of the Son. Yes, both of my sons learned well. They are both good men. My eldest son is particularly very fair. And just, almost too just. An eye for an eye, a lie for a lie. I know he loves his brother deep down, but his sense of justice says the younger brother's done wrong. He squanders all that father gave him. He said to me, there's no more here for him. Yes, he's still his father's son, but he owns nothing here. When father passes, everything here is going to be mine, for I was the one who helped to grow this estate when this younger kid was out playing around, using up all his inheritance. My younger baby was repentant. He knew he made some grievous mistakes. He felt very lonely and undeserving. Even when my husband gave him the best robe and ruby ring to wear, after the feast and some good rest, he returned them to his father. And wearing sackcloth and ash on his hair, he said to my husband in front of his brother, Father, I am not worthy to be called your son. I will toil in the fields with the hired servants. I will sleep and live with them if you will let me. I know I have done wrong. I have sinned against you and others. When I was in the other land, picking up slop to feed the pigs, running into people I used to know, but who didn't want to know me anymore, they shamed me. And I have caused worry to you and to my brother and the family that I have brought you grief. And I know that I don't owe anything here, and everything will go to my brother. At that, my oldest son jumped in with anger that we had never seen. You're damn right. You owe nothing here, for you spent all you've got. You left me alone here with all by myself while you are out gallivanting and spending all that we had worked so hard for. You say it's your inheritance, but it was our hard work, and you have no more inheritance. And the older child, the just one, stormed out. what he said was true. My heart aches for both of them. Then my husband said, my young son, know that my love for you is not less than my love for your brother. I understand you both. I know you are repentant and have suffered from your bad judgment and misdeeds and wish to make amends. In working and living with the servants, their working and living with servants will make you feel you are atoning for your sins. So be it. We do need to help your brother understand that you are making amends. His sense of justice is very full right now. My son, know that wherever you choose to live, my love follows you. Should you need anything, you need only turn to me. Even slightly, and my help will be there. And you're right, the farm is not your inheritance. Your inheritance is so much grander, and you are worthy of that. So I, as the mother, it breaks my heart to have my baby back and then see him leave the house again. I hope, I know in time, life will soften up my older son's heart. I've seen how happy he felt when he's gone to look for a sheep that's wandered off lost and found it. Perhaps when he's come to that place about his brother, as we have, he will forgive him. But his mind and heart have to be open to finding that lost sheep. In time, perhaps he just might want to bring the lost sheep back. And that's not the younger son. Thank you.
Bravo.
Yes. You know what?
Everything I've heard today is reminding me that you all are not just the writer of the word. You are the speakers of the word. And with the voices that you put on your own creations are just amazing. It's just amazing to me that we are creating in two dimensions, and we have to remember that is part of it, and why audible books have taken off and Kindle has taken off, because people learn in different ways. They don't all learn by seeing, some by hearing, some by touching with the computer. And so that we have to recognize that we are multi-talented and multi-gifted. And I wanted you to see that today. If you didn't see it or feel it, I felt it today.
Thank you, Janice.
I would like to add to that comment, if it's okay, is that your delivery, I've experienced a lot of poets along the way, and the hardest thing that poets have to learn is how to deliver the poem. And that was so good, so good, so excellent. That's the only thing that I, like Janice said, you have that dimension to be able to convey the words of your poem. So I want to thank you, Elizabeth. That's excellent, really, really excellent.
Thank you. Thank you so much. See, this is all scribbles.
It didn't sound like scribbling to us.
I should wear my glasses. I guess. Thank you so much for such generous praise.
I also want to say quickly, I love the delivery. I also love the mother's voice and the mother's wisdom and how the mother's love follows both sons. So that really spoke to me.
Thank you. I had a question. The ending, how did that strike you? The ending was perhaps in time, talking about the older son, he just might want to bring the lost sheep back. And that's not the younger son.
I like it.
Okay. It makes sense to you, right, Janice? Great.
I like it because what you're doing is sewing a thread like a quilt. And what you have done is leave it for the person. You gave them part of it. So there's an answer here, but it's not that. Don't go for the easy answer. And that was good because that's the challenge you should give a reader anyway with a poem. It is a mystery to unlock. I really believe that. I used to teach that to my students. I said, you're not supposed to understand poetry the same. Everybody shouldn't understand it the same. It's not meant to be understood exactly like it is. It's supposed to be mystical. It's supposed to be magical. And it's supposed to be something you have to figure out. It's not supposed to be, oh, yeah, I get it. And if you don't get it, fine. That's good, too. That means think that you're going to have to try again. And that's the beauty of poetry to me, too, is that it's not simple. It's not an easy thing to write or to read or to understand once you have read it yourself, even.
Thank you all for your comments. I was just feeling the delivery that you had. It was like the face of a lion. It was really, really wonderful that we were able to see each other, although we couldn't all be in the same place. That's one of the things I like about poetry pop-up. You can pop up from different parts of the world and share and inspire each other. Cynthia?
So I get to introduce a poet I really admire and I've admired for years, Honey Novick from Toronto. We first met when she contributed, we crossed paths, she contributed some amazing vegetarian recipe poems to a book I was editing, Poetic Portions, which is available in the Vancouver Public Library and on Amazon. And then she invited me to take part in a project she recently did that she'll tell you a little bit about it. She's also really involved in Friendly Spike Theater, and she's awesome as a performer. So I'm going to hand it over to Honey Novick. I'm so grateful you're here.
Thank you, Cynthia. Thank you so much for that introduction. I've got goosebumps because now I have to live up to those words. Anyway, I just wanted to say greetings from Southern Ontario, a stormy Southern Ontario. It's so wonderful to see your faces and to hear your voices. I'm assuming, Sister C, that you're from America somewhere. And Janice, it's so encouraging to hear you talk about poetry like that. Where were you when I was in school? Anyway.
Well, I also was 10 years in Toronto.
What?
In public health promotion.
Okay.
Including a rap contest among teens to get the words that go to, you know, preventing HIV. But it's too cold up there. I am in Vancouver, between Vancouver and Los Angeles.
Okay. Well, Toronto's loss is BC's gain, I guess. Yeah. So Cynthia, I would love to see that vegetarian cookbook again. What Cynthia mentioned was one of the publications that we did. I'm artist in residence with the Friendly Spike Theater, and it's an award-winning theater of people. Well, it's everybody is included, but it's primarily for people who have survived the psychiatric system. And so because I really believe that in order to create a strong society, it just can't be pockets, you know, everybody has to be included. That's how we, you know, that's how we get rid of stigma. Anyway, so that's the project that Cynthia was involved in, and I'm just delighted that you were able to be part of it. I don't know, what else did you ask me to talk about?
Oh, that was it, the name of that little book that you put out.
Poemdemic?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I coined, you know, during the pandemic, I coined poem and pandemic and gave people an opportunity through the Friendly Spike to think about, you know, how they're coping and to write it, because I believe, you know, that's how we get through stuff, is through our own, you know, relevance, our own resilience, and then together. So I didn't understand there was a prompt, so I just brought a poem that I thought perhaps may be of interest. I hope it's of interest. It's called Silent Listen. Same letters, silent, listen.
equal importance, different meanings, different languages. Silence, the active relative of silent, whose importance is revealed by writers, painters, singers, and other artistic disciplines through listening. How? We are taught that silence is devoid of sound. It is not. Birds' wings beating in flight make a rhythmic melody. We cannot hear it. Yet, if we come close enough, the rhythm would entrance us. There are many melodies unheard, yet they exist. Sonar, underwater songs go fast, slow, deep. What sounds do you believe are out there? How do we write the silent language of the living universe? Perhaps with a certain discipline, we can tune into this language. Sit in a chair with feet flat on the floor. Let the coccyx, the bottom bone of the spine, touch the back of the chair. Make sure the spine is straight. Just listen for a minimum of 30 seconds. This is not a meditation. This is active listening. It is the basis of all art forms. It is how Beethoven was able to compose symphonies while being deaf. It is how some people think themselves into concentration. Writing is not lonely when it is thought of as an action, an act of doing. Yes, we are alone when writing, but this is a form of focusing on deep listening to our own self-expression. This is where we want to go to bring forth and share what we hear. Active listening tunes our ears to focus on silence or sound. Become aware of all that you observe with your ears. Do you live on a busy street with lots of traffic? Does the flow of traffic sound like a symphony getting louder or softer? When the phone rings, does your ear flinch, or can you tell what note it is? What sounds do you hear in your daily life? Does the opening and closing of a drawer draw your attention? What does the sound of running water in the sink or shower mean to you? How does listening to people who speak other languages capture your attention? Often, we describe soundless observations as nothing. Something devoid of sound is not nothing. When we train our ears to hear beyond our expectations, we open a whole new world of wonder. Some people in big cities are aware of the cadences of traffic. In the country, it could be the clatter of birdsong. In stillness, it could be the pulsation of blood flowing through the veins. Active listening is a true exercise. Listening silently is the power of our essence.
My goodness, I can't be silent about that. That was a treatise. I mean, now just to really think about active listening and being quiet, that it's not wasting time. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Oh, thank you for inviting me and the honor of meeting everybody that's, you know, we're all connected by a certain government and we're, you know, and by a certain geography, but we're so far apart. And yet here we are together with the miracle called Zoom. It's truly an honor, and a special thank you to Cynthia for, you know, having the foresight and generosity to invite me. Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time. I know you're 3 hours ahead, so thank you for taking the time to hang out with us.
I just loved your piece, and honey, and it's the whole thing about listening, and that's really where poems begin. There's a rhythm, and also in nature, as we write about nature, sound is the first element for me that comes into it. The sound of the trees, the sound of the birds, but it also leads us to becoming more aware and more sensitive to where we are in the world. And I agree with you. It's not a meditation. It's quite a different active listening is being immediately involved in our world, in our surroundings, and hearing others too. It's a practice that is so important in how we relate to others. And so often it's lost. Our world is so noisy, so frenetic. And if we could bring that into our space as we're creating poems, it's the first element, isn't it? I mean, of course, sight and visual is too, but I think it begins with sound because poems are music and rhythm. And I loved hearing your voice, everyone's voice today. It's a real treat. Thank you.
Your words mean a lot to me. Thank you. From the part of the world that calls the raven Le Corbeau, thank you. And relative. I mean, family relative.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing, and thank you. I'll never think of ravens in the same way again. Janice, did you share your poem?
No, but I'm going to say Mary Nance should go, and then I'll be last.
You'll close us up. Okay.
I live in the Los Angeles area in California. So this was a couple of weeks ago that I wrote this one. I had a dream last week as I was waking up. I heard my mother telling me, "Get your nose out of that book for at least the millionth time." So many memories came stealing in of Peter asking me, "How do you manage to find something to read no matter where we are?" Reading. Always reading. When I was 4, I'd run to get the evening paper first so I could read the funnies. I'd try to read my bedtime story books to me before my mother came to tuck me in. Those memories are clear and strong. Reading, always reading. In my dream, a whisper grows, fills up my mind. You are a reader, Mary Nance. A reader, a communicator, a teacher, a creator, a wordsmith. Reading, always reading. I had just read what Carolyn Mace had filmed and written about the archetypal patterns in our lives. Some of them apply to me, but I hadn't yet found the reader. I know it must be there. Reading, always reading. The whispering voice continued, saying, "The words you have been reading are the tools I've given you to use, the raw materials, and the finished products. You incubate them, give them birth and life by reading, always reading. They are both your shield and the pathway to your heart. They are your weapons and your gifts. You can feel and use their power. Do not turn away from that. Reading, always reading."
Wow. I love the way you read and bring us into the story in your poems.
Thank you. This is the first time I've ever done anything like this.
But Mary Nance sends me a poem every day. If it's not one she's read, it's one where she's picked up and given accolades to another writer or poet. I salute you as a reader for sharing the way that you do. Reader and a writer.
Thank you.
Thank you. A very reluctant writer at times, but...
Okay.
I would like to say there's another lady who knows how to read a poem. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Mary Nance. Yes.
Yes.
And now, Miss Janice, have you settled down?
I doubt it. I just doubt it. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Janice Joyce Vogelglass Nathan. I come from Richmond, Illinois. That means there's a state line and it's Wisconsin after that. I stayed there for 21 years, went to college in Illinois, and got in a car and drove with my girlfriend across country I landed in California and said, I'm home, because the beach is here. The beach is my love. I'm in love with the beach, but the Midwest is kind of like the ocean, because when you look out at those fields, it just like goes on forever if you really get at the right spot. But I missed the mountains. We had lots of lakes in Illinois where I was, near Lake County. But I found my heart was here. So I became a teacher right away. I had interviewed in Chicago, got the job, didn't have any idea what the heck I was doing, and fell in love with teaching. And I taught for 46 years, retired in 2015, and said, now what the hell am I going to do? Because I'm this kind of person. I have to do bracelets. I have to do praise dancing. I have to, you know, I just have to, but dishes, no thank you. Vacuuming, no thank you. There are certain things I don't have no interest in doing. I have to be doing a craft, a project, something. And that's why I'm in love with Charlotte, because she gave me the first opportunity to be a praise dancer. And what? How old was I? Charlotte, that was a good 20 years ago,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm heading at 77 this year. And so when I was with her, I was a young chicken and I could dance around. But anyway, she gave me that opportunity and I fell in love with that too, the worship of dance and the feelings that you can say nothing with your words, which was I'm the same thing as Mary Nance. I was a reader, in a library, in the room and hiding with a book. I loved books, and probably why I became a teacher. So I wrote this back in 2020 in August. And I'm saying that my flash moment is that here in America, I am on fire for Kamala Harris. Mamala Kamala is in my heart. And I am so excited that she has lit a fire under the pants of these people who've been sitting up here, but liar, liar, pants on fire. I'm just really into this. We have been putting up with garbage, and we need to burn it to the ground and start over and be the country we're supposed to be. So in 2020, I wrote a poem, Disrespect, and I put it in a blog. And so that's why I said, friend me on Facebook, because then I can give you my blogs, my website, all those things that we should be sharing together anyway. I do not like the current level of disrespect being brought to the table, perpetrating falsehoods, pretense of intellectual persona, an academic approach with no educational experiences, fiddling a medical prescription from a genie bottle with two wishes already used up, encasing youth in animal traps and abusing their families with a court order, sending innocents to the slaughter, return to a previously escaped regime of terrorized turmoil, the disrespect of talking out of both sides of crooked lips, licked with greed and perversion. Disrespect dies on the steps when you don't allow it to enter your domain. Guard your castle well. Disrespect is looming and roaming. Don't get trapped in smallness. 9:30 a.m., August 4th, 2020, in memoriam of days gone by.
Wow.
I have journals up wazoo in here. So anytime Charlotte says poetry, this looks good. Let me do this one. I write blogs. I am currently editing the 20 chapter fiction romantic suspense novel that I started in 2001. And I then joined the Hay House Writers Community 7-day Writers Challenge. And in 7 days decided I need to finish that damn book. Excuse me. I curse a little, but I love God. And so I now am in chapter 7, getting told, how did we get here? So my editor keeps asking me, how did we get here? Because I'm ADHD, so I'm hopping around here and there. So I had to learn sequence, people, sequence. So So that's my life right now, is going back and forth between trying to untangle what I wrote all those years. But 2020 was really the jump start of getting this book done. And I'm hoping that it hits publication, self-publication this year. So watch for Suzanne's Secret Dance of Denial. And so that's why I want you to be connected on Facebook, because what you have to do is build your network. You have to build your people. And today, you guys, you, sir, and these ladies have just charged me up. So I'm ready for this week to say, chapter 8, you better get out of the house. It's time to get back to the editor and get to work. So I am thrilled to be here as always. Charlotte is an inspiration. I cannot even begin to tell you on how many levels, but I will tell you one thing. Trying to catch Charlotte to talk to her is like trying to catch a butterfly without a net. Don't bother. It's not going to happen. You're not going to catch her. Just wait. And all of a sudden, she'll float in your yard and then zoom out again. And you go, oh, that was Charlotte.
I have to say how much I have appreciated over more than 20 years of Janice dropping in with a prayer, or Janice dropping in with an inspirational word, or we did a series of poem and music things called Jamming with Jesus. And it was inviting musicians who on Sunday get told what the pastor or somebody wants them to play, but not what they wanted to play from their heart. So Janice created dances, she got young people involved, and it really was a wonderful time. And then as that phased out and I came back to Canada, Janice was doing bracelets and just letting art flow through her. And she too, as a person that has worked intergenerationally and worked a lot with young women to find things of life, find things that are positive, and to include art, singing, writing, dancing, to include it. So thank you so much. I want to thank everyone for coming today. I have, got the domain name, Poetry Pop-Up. I was trying to buy Pop-Up Poetry. It's for sale for $3,000. But I also am looking forward to doing some events with the activities that are coming up where people will come to a place and will do Pop-Up Poetry, and maybe have sponsors where we can give prizes. But the prize today is all of you being here. Thank you, audience, for being with me again. But you know what I say when they ask me what time it is? I say it's always love time, poem time.
Love time, poem time. Love time, poem time. Love time, poem time. Time for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time. Time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time. Time for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time. Time for poems, poets and singers. Time to untie all life's ringers. Poem time, love time. Time for you to reveal to me. Unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace. Rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words. Place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time. Poem time, love time. Love time, poem time. Times for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time. Time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time. Times for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time. Poem time, love time. Time for poems, poets, singers. Time to untie all life's ringers.
time for you to reveal to me, unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace, rest from toil.